So today's message is based in part on the fifth commandment, which says, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land the Lord is giving you. So this past week, two apparently innocent, young, relatively young black men were killed at point-blank range by police. One in Baton Rouge was shot, even though his hands were stuck behind his back. Another in Minneapolis was apparently reaching for his wallet to show the police his ID when he was shot. These killings, and others in Baltimore, in Ferguson, and let's be honest, hundreds more over the years, adding up to centuries of racism and grief, these killings have unnerved me and made me very sad. I mean, for me personally, I am, and Irene is, the father and mother of minority Afghani and black daughters. We are grandparents to three African-American kids growing up in the United States. And these killings, they just create a pit in our stomach that won't go away. Do you have any idea? I mean, can you imagine what it is like to have to explain to your children as they're growing up that you should always be afraid of the police? To raise your kids to understand that, okay, you do have civil rights, but you have to put them aside over here and pretend you don't have them if you don't want to risk the police killing you. But this is exactly what black parents in the United States have been teaching their kids for generations. And still the killings continue. So while I might place some hope in the fact that the United States is willing to elect a black president, and that is progress, and while I may certainly have some doubts about the specific strategies chosen by the Black Lives Matter protesters, as a grandfather and father to racial minorities in the United States, I resonate deeply with all black rage against the machine. But it actually gets worse. On Friday morning, we learned that 12 police officers were shot by a sniper at a Dallas protest against the earlier police killings. Five police were killed. Violence begetting violence. Isn't it always that way? More horror. I mean, is this how Americans settle their disagreements now? Always at the end of a gun? Is every suit, every uniform, every ethnicity, every minority a bad guy to someone else now? In the United States, the trust in the political process is just breaking down. According to The Economist magazine, only 11% of Americans believe that their Congress, the American version of our parliament, only 11% believe that it is doing a good job and heading the country in the right direction. Perhaps this is because Congress seems to think it does its job best when it tries to derail and impede and undermine anything the current president tries to do. Meanwhile, the Republicans have nominated Donald Trump to be president, in spite of his ongoing racist rants, his narcissism, his refusal to speak anything like the truth. You know, things are not as tense in Canada, thank God. But the current atmosphere of distrust that we find in the United States, it definitely has parallels here. From our Senate scandals to boys in short pants running the country from the PMO office in a recent government, from fighter jet to battleship procurement ineptitude to selling arms that will most likely be used against the citizens of that police state, Saudi Arabia, from Ontario government scandals involving power plants and computer systems, to a recent mayor who was regularly publicly drunk and high and always coarse in how he spoke, we Canadians also have 101 reasons to be cynical. What is more, we dare not as Canadians forget that Canadian blacks and Canadian First Nations people fill our jail cells all out of proportion to their numbers in the general population, and that many First Nations people still struggle with the scars of being forcibly removed from their families to be educated in residential schools where they were often abused, usually hungry, and systematically stripped of their culture, language, and heritage. Finally, judging by the G20 debacle of two or three years ago, the Sami Yateem shooting in Canada, we also have police accountability issues. Even Trudeau, who remains a popular figure as our new prime minister, he remains popular, I think, in part because he's playing against the political type. He's surprising us with his movie star charisma, his machismo, his optimism, and we, for now, are eating it up. We live in a time of profound cynicism for government institutions. But actually, cynicism that we hold against all institutions, including banks and brokerages and large corporations, and even Rotary clubs and churches. In fact, volunteer institutions, such as service clubs and churches, actually suffer disproportionately from this cynicism and distrust that's in our society today. This is because while you can't leave the government that you're disgusted with, or you can't refuse to bank because you don't like the banks, you can express your dislike for institutions and authority by leaving a volunteer organization like the church, and many people do. All of which gets me to our two texts for this morning, the fifth command and Paul's words about obeying government authority. I believe these words suggest for us a responsible path forward in this calamitous time of mistrust and even violence. Let's start with the fifth commandment. Honor your father and your mother that you may live long in the land that the Lord your God has given you. It's a command, but not about loving your mother and father, you will all have noticed. It's a political command. You see, ancient Israel was not so much a nation as it was a confederation of tribes, very much like the five Iroquoian tribes that made up the Iroquoian Federation already 800 years ago, and that is still with us today in southern Ontario as the Six Nations Confederation. The Israelite Confederation is made up of not five or six, but 12 tribes. And each of these tribes is made up of clans, and then even smaller, multi-generational family groups, children, parents, grandparents. Politically, in ancient Israel, there was no king. There was no bureaucracy, there was no standing army, there was no capital city, there was not even a judiciary beyond the gray-haired old men, old tribal elders who sat in the village square. When something needed to be done, the family or the clan or the tribal elders would get together and decide. Again, the most basic unit in this tribal system, the foundation of all political authority, was your mother and your father. The fifth command demands that their authority be honored and that all other tribal authority flows from this. The word for honor in the command, I've said this before, but the word for honor in the command is the Hebrew word chabod, which is most closely related to words that describe the power, the holiness, the glory of God, the kabod of God. And now we're called to give that same kabod to mothers and fathers. We're supposed to treat them in almost godlike ways, because we are, by so doing, acknowledging the mother and the father as God-given rulers and being told to trust and obey them. The command goes on to connect the mother and the father to politics directly by promising long life in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. Again, nothing is said here about loving parents, just honoring them. And in this context, honoring the tribal political authority that was central to Israel. Now, the New Testament text that's most like the fifth command is the one we just heard read from Romans 13. Two big similarities. First, the fifth command says that we need to honor, it uses that word in a list, that is, submit to the power of the basic political unit of that day, which would be the Roman Empire's authority people. Likewise, Paul says that Christians must be subject to or give honor to the governing authorities of his day, because like parents, they get their authority, their kabod, from God. Second, just as the Israelites are promised that they will live long in the land as a reward for obeying the command, but that makes it political, Paul promises that the first Christians, if they do what is good, you will receive the ruling authorities' approval, a similar reward. Now, what's amazing about Paul's words is that he wrote them while he was personally under threat by the Roman Empire. He was constantly being arrested, he was being imprisoned, his life was being threatened, all for being a troublemaker. Paul wrote these words about obeying the ruling authorities, about paying taxes, about giving honor, when he had every reason in the world, as a persecuted Christian, to doubt his imperial, coercive, corrupt, violent, and oppressive government. It was a military government, and human rights were not on the agenda. Paul seems to have thought that the best way to get along with such a bad government was to be as humble and quiet and peaceable as possible, while continuing on the sly to do the very subversive thing that was making that government so angry, worshiping Jesus instead of the Roman gods. But whatever we think of Paul's strategy, it's worth noting that obedience to the governing authorities, whether mom or dad in the Old Testament or Roman emperors in the New Testament, obedience to governing authorities is strongly recommended in both Testaments. So where does that leave us? Well, listen, what would obedience to the governing authorities look like in a modern democracy based on a commitment to human rights and personal freedom, especially freedom of assembly and freedom of speech? What does obedience look like in that kind of a society? To me, obedience in a modern democracy is about much more than obeying the jot and tittles of the law. Obedience requires entering into the spirit of democracy. Honoring today's political authority looks like democratic engagement. It looks like picking up the phone to call your city councilor. Though if it is Jay Robinson you're calling, you better be very nice, since she's a member of this church. It looks like sending letters to your MPP. It looks like signing petitions that go to your MP. It looks like voting, for sure. It looks like making political donations to the politicians or the party or the pressure group that you think will do most to uphold the values that are important to you and to our society. It looks like participating in demonstrations like the Black Lives Matter demonstrations that held up the gay pride parade last week, but participating in legal demonstrations, if you believe that that's what your cause needs to get a hearing, it looks like engaging government through organizations like labor unions and trade associations and other lobbying groups to honor and obey the authorities today in a democratic society is to get involved democratically. Listen, there are a lot of competing interests and points of view in our modern secular society, from left to right, from eco interest to oil interest, and so on and so forth. And when competing groups get together, they tangle and they shout, and sometimes they say unkind things, and sometimes they only make slow progress as they try to keep the ship of state and our society as a whole afloat and healthy. Democratic politics are always messy because democratic politics are the only way that people in institutions with competing goals and visions will ever be able to live together at peace without one group totally taking over coercively from the other. You have to argue. You have to use your elbows. You have to talk. You have to negotiate. You have to compromise. You have to get your opinion out there and work it out. To make the system work, we have to engage it rather than shrug our shoulders. We must honor it rather than express an endless line of cynical viewpoints. We must trim our system's excesses and reform it when necessary, rather than take up arms either against minorities or the police. I worry about the spreading disease of hyper-partisanship in my other country, the United States. I worry about the racism and the violence. I worry about the gerrymandering and cheating, the buying and selling of candidates, the embrace of birther conspiracy theories about Obama being not an American or about him being a Muslim, not being born in the United States. But here and now in Canada, the big deal is this. In our democratic society, honoring those in authority means exactly this: getting involved in a way that suits our gifts and opportunities. I'm not telling you how to vote, not telling you what issue is the most important one for you, but I'm saying obeying the Fifth Commandment, following Paul's advice, means not turning your back to the process, but engaging it for the values that enliven you. For the sake of First Nations kids and grandkids, little kids who've never had a healthy relationship with their elders because their elders were broken. For new immigrants, maybe because they're fleeing Brexit, or maybe because they're coming from a war zone in Syria. For the poor and the homeless that we walk by every time we go to the subway. For the sake of our beautiful environment that I'm going to see in Haida Gwaii in 2 weeks. For the sake of peace on our street. For the sake of our kids' future. I'm not just saying it's a good idea to get involved. I'm saying that the biblical record is saying get involved. This is the right thing to do. It's the democratic thing to do. It's the Christian thing to do. It's the way we honor our parents today in our non-tribal but democratic society. Get involved. Amen.